And now it's time for Power of Prophecy with your host, former professor at the University of Texas at Austin, career United States Air Force officer, and best-selling author, Tex Mars.
Hello, friends. This is Tex Mars. Welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. You know, this is a prophetic organization, and prophecy is extremely vital and imperative to the understanding of Christianity. The Old Testament has almost 300 prophecies of the coming of Jesus Christ in the flesh. And he came, did he not? Right on time. The book of Revelation is a premier book of what's going to occur in the last days. And it warns us, of course, about the synagogue of Satan, Revelation 2 and Revelation 3. And we see in the book of Revelation that Jesus much loves prophecy. In fact, Jesus has a title, the Spirit of Prophecy. Now, you can't get any more important than that. That he names himself in the book of Revelation, Jesus Christ names himself as the Spirit of Prophecy. And that's why today, what we're going to talk about today is very important, extremely important. I believe it's important because it has a lot to do with your future, my future, and the future of our loved ones, our family, our children, our city, our town, our nation, even the whole world. Today we're going to talk about, believe it or not, the book of Esther. Now, I've discussed the book of Esther before, and I have a two-hour investigative tape on this subject. I'm one of the only prophecy teachers in Christendom today that's ever spoke to you about Esther. Now, I want to explain about Esther. You see, Esther is a book that Christian women seem to love. I see it often in Christian bookstores, books, even novels. There's even been a Christian movie about Esther. Esther. Queen Esther. Now, I want you to understand something. Esther did not join the Bible until about the 4th century of Christendom. 4 centuries, and it was included in the Bible. It was placed right before the book of Job in the Old Testament. It's a very short book. You can read it. And many Christians, without understanding, without discernment, read it and say, isn't it wonderful? And they call Esther a heroine. She's a heroine. She's a wonderful lady. Queen Esther. Now, that's because the Jews know Esther as their queen. But today, we're going to take a little different look at Esther. We're going to point out some of the lessons that you need to understand about Esther, and you're going to be surprised. Now, Martin Luther said this was really not even supposed to be in the Bible. Esther is not a biblical book. And many of the early church fathers refused to count Esther as one of the books of the Bible. Now, why is this so? It's because the book of Esther never once mentions God. You start off with, there is no God in Esther. Now, it's true that the Jews have a fast. But many nations and religions had a fast. This one is not a fast in order to meditate and pray to God, but simply a fast. We see also that one of the main characters, Mordecai, in the book of Esther, puts himself in sackcloth and ashes to mourn and fast. But this also does not mean that he was a pious Jew. a religious man of God. And the key to everything is to understand this, that the two main characters, the two heroes and heroines, are Esther, the queen, and Mordecai, her cousin, and get their names, dear friends. Esther has a meaning in the Babylonian tongue and the Chaldean tongue. It means Ishtar or Ashtar. It means the star goddess. Even the Babylonian Talmud, the holy book of the Jews, says that this Esther has a relationship to the star goddess who was worshipped by the Babylonians and by the king of Persia, Ahasuerus, to whom Esther is married. Now, the scholars tell us that Ahasuerus actually is King Xerxes. That's his other name, the one you'll read about in history books. He was a great king that had 20 satraps that he governed. A satrap is a province. But Esther says he has 127. So there is an error there in Esther. And perhaps it's a cause for the Jews bragging a little bit about their queen and her domain. It's much bigger than, you know, in real history. But nevertheless, for those who say this is a book of God and it should be in the Bible, let me explain something to you. You see, the Jews were taken captive by Babylon during the days of Jeremiah, and the prophet Jeremiah prophesied that they would be captive, they would be taken back to Babylon, and there they would be remain prisoners of the king for 70 years. And exactly 70 years later, Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar, and his son were conquered, and the Persians took over. And for 80 years they reigned. Now, when they took over Babylon, and you can read about that if you'd like to, in the book of Daniel, Daniel prophesied that Babylon would fall, and the handwriting was on the wall, and it fell. And it's interesting to me, now this is in the book of Daniel, of course, it's interesting to me that that was the 70-year period, and the new king who took over favored the Jews and said, you may return to your home, to Jerusalem. And thus we have the stories of Ezra and Nehemiah in the Bible. And they rebuilt the wall. You can read all that in Nehemiah in the Bible. After 70 years of captivity, it was exactly as was prophesied by Jeremiah. But this story of Esther, and that's what it really is, it's a novel, it's a fiction novel, about Esther and her cousin Mordecai, takes place about 80 years after that. Now, God told them they would return after 70 years. But Esther says there were many Jewish exiles and that the Jews were really situated or lived throughout the kingdom of Persia. Now, it would be much like Israel today. We're told by some in the Christian community who are very confused and mixed up that Israel is a new homeland for the Jews, the old homeland, they say restored. And all of the Jews are to return to Israel. But the American Jews don't want to return. And the European Jews don't want to return. They want to stay in America and Europe and gain great wealth. And most of the billionaires of America are Jews. Why don't they return? Why don't they go home to Israel? They don't want to. They want to stay in America and enjoy the good life and the luxury and the billions of dollars that they have made for themselves in this great country. So they are in rebellion against God, if we believe some Christians. They're in rebellion because they refuse to return to Israel. And these Jews in the time of Esther also had refused to return. Now, Esther had no mother and father and lived with her cousin, Mordecai. But according to the rabbinical accounts, that's the rabbi's account, you can read about this in the Babylonian Talmud, that's the holy book of the Jews, Esther was actually secretly married to Mordecai. She was secretly married. Now, that's what the rabbis tell each other. She was secretly married. Now, think of her name, Esther, the star. Now, the Babylonians worshiped the great star goddess, and their queen Esther was named after her. And they worshiped the great god Marduk as well. And that's who Mordecai was named after. So we have the characters in this book. Esther, the cousin or husband of Mordecai, whichever one you want to choose to be truthful. And in the Jewish encyclopedia and in the Jewish Talmud, called the Babylonian Talmud, Esther means Ishtar or Ashtar, the great goddess of Babylon. And the name Mordecai means I am Marduk. Now, how is it that two holy people of God, two great heroes and heroines of the Bible, have the name Mordecai and Esther? Isn't that strange? How is it that they're both rebellious and they've been told many years before they were ever born they were to go back to Israel, go back to Jerusalem, but they refused, as did many of the other Jews in the kingdom of Persia? So these are things I want you to consider, my friends. Now, the book of Esther starts off with King Ahasuerus. He's having a big party. In fact, already he's been in this party for 7 days. It's a drinking party. They're drinking high spirits, they're called. They're drinking wine. Now, friends, after you've been drinking for 7 days, I propose to you that you'll probably be drunk. You might even be out completely. But the king was in high spirits, the Bible tells us, after 7 days of drinking wine. Oh, they were having a great party. Were they not? In fact, they were celebrating 180 days of festival in the capital city, Shushan, or Susa. 180 days. Now, figure that out or calculate it mathematically. 180 equals 6 plus 6 plus 6 equals 18. And 18 in Babylonian and biblical numerology equals the number 666. Now, the king, feeling in high spirits, meaning he was drunk, and there he was with all the other lords and the nobility and this general and that general and this, prince and that prince and so forth, asked all the lords there, all of the dignities or whatever you want to call them. I call them drunks. Although he said, by the way, you don't even have to drink if you don't want to. He didn't put anything on. He didn't drink if you want, don't drink if you don't want. But he said, you know, it's time for my beautiful queen, who was not Esther, by the way, but her name was Vashti. Vashti. It's time for Vashti to come out and perform for us, to show herself. Now, Vashti was busy with the women. She was throwing a party for the women. And she seemed to be a very virtuous woman. And she thought the king was way off base to call her in and say, come out here and show off yourself to everybody. I want to show everybody how beautiful you are. Now, the way the king and queen and all the others celebrated was they had a bed. And they laid out the bed. It was a beautiful thing. And they laid on the bed and they brought them, you know, wine and grapes and meats and wonderful delicacies and so forth. Come with me, he says. Come on, Vashti. Come out and show yourself. I want everyone to see how beautiful my wife is. Now, Vashti was embarrassed over this, no doubt. And she was insulted. How dare her husband, the king, make her come and strut around and walk around and show how beautiful she was. She was a virtuous woman. She said, I will not do this. Uh-oh. Now, you see, the feminists of today would say, that's great. She's not going to be bossed around. She's not going to be treated as a show thing, as an object by the king. But the king was disappointed, especially when one of his top lieutenants said, oh, great king, your wife Vashti refuses to go along with what you've asked her to do. She refuses to come out and show herself. And if the word of this gets around to all the other women of the kingdom, they'll start treating their husbands bad. They'll start disobeying. They'll say, well, I can do it too if Queen Vashti does it. I can tell my husband no too. Up to now, we've had it pretty good, O king. We're like, you know, the big guys. We're the, you know, whatever the women, whatever we tell the women, they've got to do. But your queen won't do what you tell her to do. And the king says, well, what should I do about this? And his great lieutenants and the kings and all the others said, well, oh, great king, we recommend that you get rid of her. Get rid of Vashti. You've got many beautiful young virgins and others in the kingdom. Go out and get yourself a new one. So he did. He ordered that Vashti would lose her crown. Now, in the Jewish Encyclopedia, we read that she was beheaded for her refusal to show herself, to parade around. I don't know whether he wanted her to go half-naked or what he wanted. Remember the story of King Herod and Salome? She did a dance for him, a sexy dance. And he promised her this, you know, whatever you want in the kingdom, I will give you. Well, Vashti, the Jewish Encyclopedia says, was beheaded. And the king sent his men out there to go find another one. And they came and they brought many beautiful women back as concubines to the palace. And the king spent one night with each one that he wanted. Each one that he thought was beautiful. Because apparently, that was the main criterion. It wasn't that they were mentally smart or intelligent, or that they were virtuous and kind and good. It's just that they looked sexy and gorgeous. That's what the king wanted. Now, Mordecai was pretty swift about this, and he told Esther, this is our chance. We can get up high in the royal court. If we keep our mouth shut about us being Jews, let's keep quiet. Now, the Jews were not at all despised. They were not at all mistreated. They'd gained great ground in the kingdom. Remember the story of Daniel? Why, he was made one of the highest ministers in the court. He was Jewish. And yet they wanted to keep it a secret that they were Jews. Why is that, friends? Why do the Jews, we call them crypto-Jews, why do they hide their heritage? Why do we have in America today many Jews who change their names, who pretend that they're not Jews? When in America, the Jews have more money than anybody. They have the highest careers. They go to the nicer schools. They go to Ivy League schools and so forth. Why did John Kerry change his name from Khan to Kerry? Why did he pretend to be Irish when we now know for sure that he was Jewish? Why did Secretary of State Madeleine Albright express surprise to find out that she was Jewish? So many today claim not to be Jew, but when you really check and investigate, you find that they are, then they come out and admit it. Why don't they just admit it? They have a great advantage, but they're evidently being sneaky and deceitful. Maybe they want to gain their billions and their great fame and fortune, but not let people know that the Jews are the ones gaining all of the fame and fortune. In any case, the king, supposedly, according to Esther, chose Esther as his new wife. Of all the hundreds of women that paraded in front of him, whom he tried out for a night. I think you know what that means, folks. I think you know what that means. It means basically that Esther was whore for a night. Now, I've told this to Christians before, and they said, no, Esther certainly did not do anything like that. But friends, that's the focus of this book in the Bible. And let's face it, King Ahasuerus was not the nicest guy in the world, was he? He was a drunk. And he got rid of a good wife, a virtuous, beautiful wife. Maybe even beheaded her. And he chose someone else to take her place. Esther. Now Mordecai, who was her cousin, he got a big job and is one of the king's ministers too. So he was high up in the king's order. High up. So they were doing right well, weren't they? She became queen, and her cousin became one of the king's ministers. Now, that's sort of the first part of the book of Esther. Now, I want you to understand this. Today, the book of Esther is greatly celebrated throughout the Jewish world. Here in the United States, every synagogue has 2 days in which they have the festival of Purim. Purim tells this story that I've just told you about now, but I'm not finished with it. We're just beginning this story because something's going to happen to Esther and Mordecai. And the king's number two man, I guess you could say, the next to the king, his grand vizier, was a man named Haman. And Haman was an Amalekite. And of course, the Jews have always, throughout history, hated the Amalekites. And there Haman, the grand vizier of the king, was Amalekite. Now, what is the festival of Purim? It occurs for 2 days every year. And it's an interesting festival because in Jewish synagogues and meeting houses throughout the world, each spring, for 2 days, the High Holy Day Festival of Purim is celebrated in honor of Queen Esther's accomplishments. We'll talk about that in a moment. Now, during the festivities, Jewish children are given little triangle-shaped cookies. Triangle-shaped cookies. And they have little fruit things on them, apricots and dates and raisins and other goodies on top of the cookies. They eagerly bite into these cookies. And the adults tell the children, imagine you are biting off the head of your enemy, Haman. That's right. These triangle-shaped cookies represent Haman. So when you bite in these cookies, well, you're just chomping the head off of Haman. In fact, the kids are told to call the cookies by the word Hamantaschen. Hamantaschen. What is Hamantaschen? It means literally the flesh of Haman. They're teaching the children to be little cannibals and to eat the very flesh off of Haman. Now, this may sound grotesque to you, but if it does, I want to take you to the book of Acts in the Bible, where we find the story of the first Christian martyr, Stephen, who told the Jews they had done a horrible thing in the killing of Jesus Christ. And what did they do when Stephen told them this? Well, the Jews grabbed him, and they viciously tore into him, and they gnashed at him with their teeth, In other words, they took huge chunks out of Stephen's flesh. They ate the flesh of Stephen. And then they grabbed stones and took him outside the city and stoned him to death after biting him and eating on him with their teeth. So vicious were the Jews. Later on, in fighting against the Romans, 65 to 70 AD, we see the Jews would actually tear at their enemies and tear out their entrails and their intestines out of their body and then eat their intestines raw. So vicious were they. Now, it seems then that Esther was made queen, and Mordecai was the king's minister, and things went along pretty good, but then one day Haman happened to walk by Mordecai near the palace there somewhere. And Mordecai, even though Haman was the grand vizier, the highest ranked man other than the king in the kingdom, Mordecai refused to bow to him or to prostrate himself. In other words, he wouldn't even recognize the grand vizier. And this made Haman extremely angry. He knew that the Jews hated all the Amalekites. In fact, the Jews, according to Haman, hated everybody except themselves. And that's exactly what the Apostle Paul says of the Jews. They hate everybody but themselves. And to this day, the Jews say that all the Gentiles will die. When the Jews get their earthly kingdom, the Gentiles who refuse to worship the Jews must die. Now, Haman was an Amalekite, and all he wanted was respect. I mean, he was the big cheese. He was a grand vizier. But Mordecai refused to give him respect. And it angered him and made him furious at Mordecai. Now, let's stop there and ask yourself a question, my friend. Mordecai was a member of the king's royal court, is one of the ministers. Why would he not give obeisance? Why would he not obey the grand vizier? Why wouldn't he respect him? Why wouldn't he prostrate himself? He wasn't calling him a king. He was just recognizing him as very high up in authority. It was because Mordecai thought the Jews were better than the Amalekites, and he refused to give in. And this put in motion a plan by Haman. Haman determined that he would kill all the Jews in the kingdom, including Mordecai. But Haman did not know that the queen herself was Jewish. She had kept this quiet. She had kept it quiet that she was a Jew. So Haman went to see the king and said, "O great king, there are people in your kingdom who stick to themselves. They don't pal around with other peoples. They think they're better than everybody else. And they're very rich. Give me the power to arrest and kill all of them, and I'll bring in a lot of money to your kingdom." And the king said, "Okay." And he signed the order, "Let it be done as Haman asked." That on this day, one day, the day of Pur, they could all be killed. According to, as Haman wanted it, the king agreed and signed the law, and thus it was. On a certain day, secret and timed to the Jews, they would all be killed. Now, was this right? Of course not. Was Haman wrong in wanting to kill all the Jews? Yes, he was. But Mordecai found out about the plot, and then we have the second part of the plan. And we're going to tell you about that when we come back in just a moment. You're listening to Tex Mars, and we're talking about the lessons of Purim. Lessons for today. We'll be right back. Hello, friends. Again, this is Tex Mars. You know, I received in the mail from my good friend Edward Henry his terrific book, Antichrist, the beast revealed. Antichrist, the beast revealed. It's a book of some 700 pages. It's a huge book. And in it, Edward Henry, who's a very educated man, he's an attorney, graduated from the University of Notre Dame. He's a born-again Christian. And he writes in this book that the Antichrist is already here, that the Pope of Rome is the Antichrist. But he's Antichrist of a world church that's different than anything that you and I can conceive. In fact, this world church is made up of Jews and Catholics and even a false Protestant church. And it's interesting to me that it even includes some Muslims. So you have a horrible church, and the Antichrist is the beast that will run it all. Now, if you've heard that the Jesuits are the power behind the world conspiracy, then you need to get this book. And it'll tell you what the Jesuits are, who they are, and you'll see the powers that the Jesuits have. But you'll also see who the Jews are and their Talmud. And you'll see that the Catholic Church has been taken over by the Jesuits, yes. By the Jews, absolutely. And this book is just one of the most amazing things I've ever seen. And I'll tell you, you've got to have this. Everybody must read this book. It'll talk about the New Age movement. You'll see what the New Age movement has to do. And Freemasonry. All of these groups are all coming together. They're coalescing as one. The great world religion of the devil is here, made up of the Masons and the Catholics and the Jesuits and the Jews. And, of course, their great master, Lucifer. Lucifer. You've got to get this book. And I'll tell you, it's an amazing book. And I couldn't hardly put it down. I want you to have your copy of Antichrist, the Beast Revealed. And, Jerry, I think this book is only $20, isn't it? $35? Okay, good. $35. I started to say, wow. What a 700 pages or so. Okay, $35 for this book. This is the first edition. Now, we have some of the very first copies of this book. And again, it's an amazing book. $35. Please add $5 shipping and handling. A total of $40. And ask for the book, Antichrist, the Beast Revealed, by Edward Henry. Now, Edward Henry was once a Roman Catholic himself. What did he do to find Jesus? He read the Bible. He read the Bible over and over until he was convinced in his heart that he must be born again. And the Holy Spirit taught him that the Catholic Church was evil. Now, imagine a young boy who had gone to Catholic schools. Catholic high school, had even been chosen for the University of Notre Dame. And then he went to a Catholic law school, a Jesuit school. You would think that the young Edward Henry could not escape such a history, such a background, that destiny would have him forever to be a Roman Catholic, a Jesuit. But he's not. He's not. I put Edward Henry in the category of Martin Luther, of Tyndale, of all the other great reformers. And here in the year 2015, God has raised up Edward Henry. And he's put out this incredible book. Now, friends, when God raises up a man like Edward Henry, it's a rare thing, and it's a wonderful thing to see. You must have this book by Edward Henry, $35, add $5 shipping and handling. It's entitled Antichrist, the beast revealed. How to get it? Well, you can phone us toll free, 1-800-234-9673. 1-800-234-9673. Or you can go to our website, powerofprophecy.com. There's even an advertisement, an ad, right on, you know, the home page for this book. Order it through our website. Or you can send your check for $40. That includes all the shipping and postage and such. Just send $40 to me, Tex Mars, 1708 Patterson Road, Austin, Texas, 78733. Of course, I won't say it. It'll go here into the ministry, and folks will open up your envelope, and you'll have the book. We'll ship it out of here within 2 business days. You know, we don't mess around with these books. I tell you, we get them out. If you order from us, we know you want it. And we're going to get it right back to you. That's a service that we provide. I've always smiled when somebody says, you know, please allow 3 to 4 weeks for handling and shipping. Wow, that's insane. If it's 3 to 4 weeks, blame the postal system. Don't blame us, because we're going to get it out for you, friends. I promise you. We're going to move this book, as we do all of our audio tapes and videos and CDs and our other books as well. Antichrist, the Beast Revealed by Edward Hendry. And now let's return to our regular program while we're discussing the lessons of Purim, the 2 holy days of the Jews, which, according to the book of Esther itself, these holy days are ordained by the Jews. In fact, I'm reading chapter 9, verse 27. It says the Jews ordained that this festival be held at an appointed time each year. Wow. Not ordained by God, but by the Jews. Is that what God wants? Is that really a holy day when you ordain it yourself? And the word God is not found in here, and they never pray to God. And it ends by saying, Mordecai the Jew was next unto King Ahasuerus, and great among the Jews, and accepted of his brethren, and he sought the wealth of his people. Do you get that? He sought the wealth of his people. That was what Mordecai wanted, the wealth of his people. Now, Mordecai had plenty of wealth, and let's see how he got it. Now, we've already talked about Haman, the grand vizier, plotting the death of all the Jews. And he had chosen a certain day, and he was going to see, he sent out letters to all the provinces, to all the law enforcement officers and all the king's agents to round up the Jews and to kill all of them that day. But Mordecai found out about it, and he told Esther. He got a message to Esther and told her, they're going to kill all of us unless you go to the king and tell him to stop this holy massacre of we Jews. Now, she wrote back to Mordecai and said, I can't do that because the king has a law. He has not called for me for 30 days. She had evidently fallen out of favor with the king. I'm out of favor with the king. He hasn't called for me for 30 days. But he has a law that if somebody approach him, if somebody go to the king without the king calling them, they will die. If I go to the king, I will die, perhaps. If I go to the king, she says, without him calling me first, that might be the kiss of death. Because he has a law that says he'll put to death those whom he doesn't call. And it's been 30 days and he hasn't called her into his chambers. Well, Mordecai wrote her back and says, guess what? You better go see the king. You better take a chance and risk death, because being queen is not going to get you off. You're a Jew. When they find out you're a Jew, they're going to kill you too. Or, he said, you'll die later on. If it's the purposes of destiny, you will die too. Being queen will not get you off, he said. And that scared her a little bit, obviously. And so she determined that she would indeed go to see the king. And she went to see the king, and he was sitting on his throne carrying the royal scepter, his symbol of authority. And she went and she waited for 3 days to see the king, just outside his chambers, outside the throne. And he looked furious. He was angry. Was he angry at her? Possibly. And he didn't even look at her. He was just furious. Nevertheless, when finally he did look upon her, he saw with love. He loved her. She was beautiful. And he reached his, and he took his scepter and held it out to her and invited her in. She was saved. And he said, Queen Esther, I will give you anything in the kingdom that you want. I will give you up to one half of the whole kingdom if you want it. She says, what I want most of all is to have a dinner, a banquet, with you and with your grand vizier, Haman. And the king said, certainly, we'll do that. So the next night, there comes the grand vizier. He was proud. Boy, here I am. Ho, ho, ho. He had already determined he was going to kill Mordecai and all the Jews, and he had already built the gallows for Mordecai to die on. But in comes Esther for the banquet. And he was so proud. I'm the only guy other than the king invited to the banquet. Boy, aren't I great, said the grand vizier. And the king was happy again with Esther and said, what can I do for you? I will give you up to half the kingdom, whatever you say. And she said, I want the death of Haman. I want the death of Haman. And I want this edict to be overturned, that the Jews not die as Haman had planned. Haman is an evil man. Well, Haman was shocked. The king was too, but he said, as you wish. And he ordered it done. And he ordered that Haman be hung on the gallows that he had prepared for Mordecai. Now, that was exactly what was done in this kingdom of Persia. Esther got her wish. The king had promised her anything she wanted, up to half of his kingdom. And what she wanted was to kill Haman. And so they hung him on the gallows. The gallows. And as far as the great killing of the Jews, she said, I want that reversed, and I want the power to have the Jews to kill all the people that they want to first. I want them to be able to go out into all the kingdom, all 127 provinces, and whoever they want to kill, they will have your seal, your authority, your army, your police, so-called. All of the power and authority of the king, and they will go forth to kill all their enemies. And the king said, it is yours, as you wish. And so, it was done. Haman, who had planned to kill all the Jews, was himself slain. And all those throughout the kingdom that did not love the Jews and do whatever they wanted, and you know, sort of like going throughout America, going to every town, every village, every city. And whoever you want to kill, you just kill them. And everybody was frightened because they'd heard that Mordecai had won. And Mordecai, in fact, was given by the king a great position. He was made the new grand vizier. Mordecai was the new grand vizier. He had taken over from Haman. Well, the people of the kingdom saw that Esther was still the queen, that she was still pleasing to the king, that her wish had come true, The king gave her what she wanted. She was able to kill anybody that the Jews wanted to kill. Anyone they wanted to kill, they were able to. They were like 007, weren't they? Agent 007 had a license to kill. Well, she had a license to kill. All the Jews had a license to kill. And on a certain day that Queen Esther named, they did, in fact. They went throughout the kingdom and killed tens of thousands. Men, women, and children. Slew them all during Purim. Killed them all. Men, women, and children. Now, there's nothing in the Christian religion to compare with a murderous Jewish festival of Purim. Think about it, my friends. A drunk king has the power to kill all the Jews, but then when he's enticed by his sexy, beautiful, gorgeous queen, he reverses the order and has the Jews kill all of their enemies. The king even said to the Jews, you can take whatever spoil you want. You can take all their property. In fact, the king took Haman's property and gave it all to Esther. So Haman, the grand vizier, he obviously had great grand riches, a palace and all kinds of wonderful furniture and things. It was all given to Esther. As far as the rest of the Jews, they have laws. They do not personally take spoils, but they appoint others to do so. It's just like the Jews here in the United States. On Saturday, on their Sabbath, they cannot work so much as even turn on the light bulb, the light switch. But they have Gentiles to do that. They hire Gentiles to do that. They can't, if they live in an apartment building, they can't even use the elevator. They can't even push the button that's working. But they hire Gentiles to do that. But they cannot tell the Gentiles to work. That would be against the law too. So they must suggest it. So the Jew says something like, wouldn't it be nice if this elevator took me down to the first floor? And the Gentile pushes the button. Or wouldn't it be nice if somebody were to take me in their taxi to 4th and Vine to a restaurant? Well, the Gentile would take them. Wouldn't it be nice if somebody were to turn on my lights and the Gentile would turn it on? Well, the same thing held in this kingdom. They did not lay their hands on the spoil, but it came to them anyway. They were given all the great riches. And so it says, Mordecai the Jew sought the wealth of his people. They gained great riches. Got money. Wasn't that their goal? Wasn't that Mordecai's goal in the first place? To put Esther as queen? She may have been his wife, but he didn't tell anybody, did he? She's my cousin. She hadn't got any mother or father. My cousin. Mm-hmm. Now, I want you to understand this. The treachery and the bloody behavior of the Jews is wicked. Can you imagine Jesus telling someone, I will give you up to half the kingdom? His disciples asked him, who will be the greatest in the kingdom? Oh, they wanted it for themselves. I want to be first to Jesus. I want to be up there in the kingdom. And Jesus told him, you don't understand what the kingdom is. You serve in the kingdom. Jesus washed their feet at the Last Supper. He was a servant. He was a friend. Oh, they never understood a king like that. They thought he would be like Herod. They thought he would be like David, like Solomon. They never understood. He was the suffering servant. He went to the cross for his friends. He died for them. That is our Jesus, my friend. He didn't say, I want to murder all these people. Why didn't Esther tell the king, reverse this order? Why didn't she say, Haman, I will forgive you if you ask me to? Why didn't she say, we don't want to kill all these people that hate the Jews. We want to change their minds. Kill them all. Now, after the first day of all the killings throughout the kingdom, the Jews were so happy they had parties And they exchanged gifts between each other. They were so happy that they could kill all their enemies. And Queen Esther actually killed 500 of the servants of the palace. 500 servants. Anyone that obviously looked crossways at her, she killed. You, I don't like you. You, I don't like you. You die, you die, you die. And then the wickedness. You see, Haman had 10 sons. We don't know anything about these sons, whether they were good or bad, evil or righteous. But Esther said, I want them dead. And they killed all of his 10 sons. And then she told him, the king says, are you satisfied yet? She said, no, I'm not satisfied. Now I want to take the dead bodies of the 10 sons, and I want the dead bodies of the 10 sons of Haman to be brought to the capital city here of Shushan, and I want them to be hung. They were already dead. And so she transported them back to the capital city, and she got, I guess, in the public square there or something. They were already dead, and she strung them up and hung them again. Now, isn't that a nice queen for you? Isn't that a wonderful woman? And they worship her in the Jewish religion today. She's a great hero. And the Christian religion too. Oh, yes, Esther. Oh, she's a great queen. She's a murderous monster. Now, let me tell you something, what the rabbis say, what I have read in the Talmud and in the Encyclopedia of the Jews. Esther had not been called by the king for 30 days. And in the Jewish Encyclopedia, it says that the Holy Ghost surrounded her. The Holy Ghost, that's the Shekinah spirit. But when the king did not invite her in, she cried out as she stayed right outside the king's chamber where he was, not his chamber, but where he sat there on the throne. She cried out, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? Oh, yes. Oh, yes. That's in Psalms. And that's what Jesus said on the cross. As Jesus died on the cross, he said to God in heaven, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? And the Jews have Esther saying that. The Jews have Esther taking the place of Jesus Christ. They knew about Jesus. The book of Esther was not placed in the other books of the Bible until the 4th century. And they made up this little story that she would be like Jesus. Jesus had cried out, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? And Esther would also. She was the Messiah. She was the Messiah of the Jews. She is Israel. She is emblematic of Jesus, the Messiah, going to the cross. And the Talmud says that she immediately repented for having called her husband a dog. What? Yes, she was a Jewish queen. He did not know that. But she called him a dog. Now she called him a lion. You're a lion. You're a great king. When she wanted something from him. She immediately repented for calling her husband a dog and switched to the word lion. And his burning eyes were softened. And he extended toward her the symbol of his crown. Now, I want you to understand something. When the Jews every year have their Purim, they celebrate. They get drunk in their synagogues. I understand they even have some sex orgies. You say, Tex, that's impossible. They don't get drunk in their synagogues. Oh, yes, they do. In fact, they have a commandment in the Talmud. It says that on Purim, every Jew will drink so much liquor that they don't know the difference between Haman and Mordecai. They'll drink so much liquor, they'll be drunk. That's what they do. The Jews get drunk while their kids are all eating the flesh of Haman. And did you know that the chief rabbis of the Judaic religion in this world, every year they choose some person to be the Haman of the year? Oh, yes, this year there's a Haman. Last year there's a Haman. Every year there's a Haman chosen. Did you know that Saddam Hussein was twice chosen the Haman of the year by the rabbis? They wanted him dead. And they got his death, did they not? Now, I want to tell you how powerful the Jews are. On Purim of each year, there will be people dead, murdered by the Jews somewhere in this world. Now, listen to me, my friends. On October 16, 1946, at the Nuremberg War Crimes Trials, 10 Nazis, the top Nazi leaders, were sentenced to death, and their hanging took place. The hanging was accomplished by Master Sergeant John C. Woods. He was a Jew. And it just so happened that October 16, 1946, the day when these 10 Nazi leaders were put to death, were all hung at Nuremberg. That was Purim. And one of the Nazi leaders, as he went to the gallows, he was asked, "Do you have anything to say?" He said, "Yes. Today is my Purim. You will get yours tomorrow." That's what he said, the Nazi. "Today is my Purim. You will have your Purim tomorrow." In other words, in the future, you will have your Purim, because the Jews will do to your country what they have done to Germany. They have the power to arrange the hangings and the deaths on the day of Purim, and then they celebrate. This is the hatred of the Gentiles by the Jews. The Talmud declares the Gentiles are nothing but cattle and are worthy of death. It says the best of the Gentiles kill. But the Jews are holy. They're pure. They're of God. Now, a Purim is alien to the Christian spirit. As evil as these Jews are, and most of them are, I don't want to put them in any concentration camp. I don't want to take them away to any ovens. I wish only the best for the Jews. I wish for them that Abraham's promise would be theirs, that they would get the blessing and the promises of Abraham. What is that blessing? What is that promise? They would know Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior. Because Jesus made of the two, Jew and Gentile, one holy nation. If you have Jesus, you will have peace. You will have the wealth of all the ages, and it won't be money. It won't be material treasures. But you will have a power, a love so mighty and strong in your heart, so tearing away at your breast. No, there will be no Purim in the Christian religion. We will not honor Esther or Mordecai, but I'm telling you that God made sure the book of Esther was in the Bible. Should it be in the Bible? Yes, because God wants it in this Bible. He wants you to know what the plan of the Jews is for America and the world, and it's found in Esther. What they did to the Persian people in Esther, they got a drunken king to do, they're going to do for America and the rest of the Gentile world. It will happen, my friends, and only the coming of Jesus Christ will prevent great, great tragedy. I'm Tex Morris, friends. You've been listening to the lessons of Purim. Until next week, my friends, may God richly bless you.